A Friday afternoon, beautiful Friday afternoon here on Michigan Avenue in the Allstate Showcase Studio. A little bit later, we'll talk to Tom Gimbel from the LaSalle Network. You know, he went off on his solo trip to Barcelona. I can't wait to hear.
Oh, nice.
How that worked for him. But we'll talk to him about internship programs as well. Louis Lazar will be here talking about, well, he covers the airlines quite a lot, and we'll see what's new there. And then I think you like this. Our last guest of the day is Jen Bain, who's the community manager for Cards Against Humanity.
Oh, awesome.
Did you see their story about their women's edition?
I did.
Yeah.
Upcharge, make it pink. Yeah.
Right. So, and they said it's very simple to play, so it should appeal. So we'll talk to Jen about that a little bit later. The voice you hear now is Andrea Haynes, the editor of Blue Sky Innovation in the Tribune and ChicagoTribune.com. Welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thanks, Steve.
All right. You guys wrote, you did a little test kitchen play out of this Tovala oven. And I know I've talked about it a few times on the show with a few different guests. It's this, well, I'll have you explain it, but it's kind of a high end thing that might be the next thing in all of our kitchens, or it might not be. Tell me about
it. I'm dying to know if it will be or not. I was mentioning I'm so curious about this company. I think it's a very interesting concept, and I'm very curious to see if people will actually adopt it, which of course is what we'll need to make it work.
So the idea is it's this oven. What is it, like $600?
It's $400.
$400, okay.
$400.
The women's version is $600.
Exactly, and it's pink,
of course. It's pink. And it knows how to cook your food. It's cloud-based, so you put something in there, and it knows just how to, whether it's steaming, broiling, baking, or all that, it can do it.
Yeah, so it's kind of the functionality that you might think of with a microwave, but it actually cooks food in different ways. So it's able to steam food, it's able to broil the top, or do a little more sophisticated cooking. So they also offer subscription meals, which come encoded with the instructions that you need. So you do very minimal prep. It almost combines the idea of the meal kit delivery that people, you know, like for a lot of reasons,
right.
But those also require, in some cases, a lot of chopping of veggies or a little more prep. This is like 30 seconds of prep time. You basically assemble the dish, put it in the oven. One of the meals that we sampled, like a salmon meal, took 13 minutes, so it was a little bit longer than a microwave.
Sure.
But then it, again, comes out with just some more sophisticated cooking.
So the idea isn't necessarily speed, right? The idea is good food.
Quality.
Conveniently.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. The quality of preparation is really what they're stressing versus, say, a microwave.
Because it's not cheap. It's $400 for the oven. And then if you buy their meal subscription, it's $12 a meal, right? And that's a single serving.
A meal for a single serving. Yeah, and that's on a subscription basis, so it might be $36 a week, you know,
right,
if you're getting
right.
three dinners kind of thing. It's not like a $4 Lean Cuisine that you're going to microwave, right? But also, again, the quality is different. And we've just been talking about this a ton because the business model is just so interesting. It's
Tell
like
me,
you've got to get people to buy this $400 oven, and you've got to get people to make space for another oven the size of a microwave kind
right,
of thing,
right.
which in the city is, you know, can be a problem.
Because I can buy my bread machine, and then after I don't use it for 6 weeks, put it in a closet
somewhere.
Yeah.
So that, you know, just getting people to adopt any new device, I guess, can be difficult, something that's going to take up counter space. And then you can cook other kinds of food in it, but then you're kind of losing the instructional part where, you know, you scan a code and it knows Steve's making the salmon. Here's exactly how long I need to steam it, broil it, whatever.
Right. So when you said coded, so you get the salmon or the linguine or whatever it is and you put it in. And when you say it's got the code, is it a barcode?
It's
or
like
a number
QR type code. So you scan the code
and then
the machine knows
off,
what to do.
Right. And cooks it.
So you don't have to guess on that. Now, the downside of that, which even the company will say, is you can't really customize it. If you like your salmon cooked a little bit more than I do, you know, it's not as customizable. So that's something they want to look at in the future. But so then you imagine, like, okay, what if you had an older relative that you knew wasn't eating right? Maybe they would want to use it. You know, what if you did have a college student or a young adult that, you know, you could sort of see if you have the money to maybe investing in it? But it is a big ask to get people to buy a $400 device to start even using the product.
A
right?
big ask. And the other side of it is, I would imagine, because I think there are 700 ovens out there now, and they're just now becoming available to the public.
Exactly. So they did some pre-sales and some crowdfunding type things. But the reason it was in the news this week is because now the public, you know, anyone can just buy one.
But you've got people in the kitchen somewhere preparing the food.
Yes.
And it's got to be food that can be cooked by these instructions. So I would imagine if you've only got 700 ovens out there, you're limited by what you can cook in which way. The choices might not. I mean, I think that'll be a challenge too.
It's to a come narrower up with, universe, right? Like, yeah, you're choosing from what dishes they're offering. I mean, now what you could see happening if this thing seems to get some traction is like, what if they do partner with a Lean Cuisine or like a Stouffer's or some, you know, some bigger company starts making food for this, where like you can just buy it in the store and then this machine knows how to cook it. You can see ways that they could be on the cusp of something big, and you could also see ways that it just doesn't, you know, find the adoption that it needs.
Okay, so you said off the air, I think you want to fast forward 20 years and find out what happens.
Yes, I feel like this is going to be a business case study, and I'm curious to know if it will ultimately be a positive one or not.
What do you think will happen?
I'd be a little worried about it because of the issue of, like, for me, I'm obsessed with the space issue because I just think the people most likely to want to use something like this might not have the space for it. On the other hand, I try to think creatively and, again, think of, like, older adults or people that I think the food industry needs some big hacks, which are happening, right? There's a lot of disruption with the meal kits because meal planning and grocery shopping and prep and cooking, I sort of enjoy it and I still find it burdensome. And I just think there are solutions that will be adopted that will succeed. Time will tell whether this is one of them.
Right. And sometimes, well, maybe oftentimes, ideas that are groundbreaking or first of their kind might not succeed as they first emerge.
Maybe they're ahead of their time.
It's a harbinger of what's coming. Speaking of harbingers of what's coming, everyone was talking about these boot camps, right? Boot camp schools, and that was the way to go. I know there have been some summer camps open for kids. There's this Dev boot camp, which had a presence in Chicago, which just said it's shutting down.
Yeah, and this news was surprising to people, I think, because Dev Boot Camp was one of the early schools that gave you this immersive kind of coding education. And it's just a company that people, there's a lot of affection for it. I think it's one of those things you could tell on Twitter when the news came out that they were closing. People were shocked, but also kind of sad about it. You know, they have 3,000 alumni. They're in some of the big companies, including in Chicago. Companies like Braintree, Trunk Club, Sprout Social, Jellyvision, you know, like people, this was how people have created coding careers for themselves. And you could just tell there's a lot of sentiment in it. Like the cohorts that go through it bonded and people have this very positive feeling about it. So they sold to Kaplan. They originally, you know, a smaller company.
Which is
company,
a for-profit college.
Large education. Right. Yeah. So apparently that gave them enough juice to continue on for a little while, but they're saying they've never been profitable. And, you know, between them and Kaplan, they just didn't see a way clear to make it so and be what they wanted to
and
be.
And so we're mourning this one.
It seems like it. You know, I've been tracking people who are talking about it on Twitter, and there's just definitely some sort of sadness for it. But obviously coding education isn't going away, so there'll be, I'm sure, many new ways to get that,
to
as we often
out.
Talk about.
Let's go to Peanut. And this is an idea with the Chicago connection, I think. We all know about Tinder or what are the other ones? Not Match.com.
I don't know. I don't know anything about online dating.
Bumble? No, you don't know Bumble?
I'm teasing Steve. Oh. But yeah, there are a ton of them. But this one, Peanut, is like specifically focused on moms, which is kind of cracking me up because I have a friend who wrote for the Wall Street Journal something like 25 years ago, a hilarious story about a mom who was going out and literally like trying to find friends. And it's almost like trying to find the love of your life, right? You're like, oh, you know, you're in a coffee shop going, oh, could that mom be my friend? Is this person right for me? And new moms go through that because they need convenient friend dates. Just like,
I remember going through that when my wife Sharon and I were first married, moved into a new neighborhood. And you're sort of like couples dating too, trying to find other friends.
So there's maybe your big idea, Steve.
Could be that be
swipe for a couple friends.
I think that probably exists, but it's illegal in most states.
Okay,
but so this one is for moms of young kids to find each other, right?
Yep, exactly. So if you have a newborn, you need to find a friend. Often, you know, as the story reflects, you might be just moving to the suburbs, or you might be staying in the city, but your young mom friends are moving out. You know, it's a time of change for people, and so sometimes they just need new friends that are at the same stage of life that they are, and also that are physically convenient to them, because you might only have an hour to socialize. You need to be able to run, go get coffee. You can't necessarily go to a suburb to see a friend or have them come downtown. Sure. It gets complicated. So it's supposed to be building in where you can find friends close to you that are in that stage of life.
And it's called Peanut, and it's up and running in Chicago?
It's called Peanut. It's up and running. So they're on the App Store, but they hadn't really promoted it. And of course, this kind of thing, you know, you need some critical mass, or you're not going to be able to find friends if you use it. So this week they rolled out marketing in the Chicago area, and they're going to be pushing it, you know, heavier here, and in order to make it work, hopefully getting enough people to sign up.
I read in the story that it's created only through Facebook, which is an effort to keep guys off.
Yes, they ask you to sign up through Facebook, which people sort of like and don't like, depending. But they are trying to build in some ways to have safety. So you actually have your name associated with it, and they want to make sure that it's only women and that people aren't trying to use the site for the wrong reasons.
So stay-at-home dads aren't welcome.
They're not. And I looked, there were actually comments about that. I think, like, you know, there might be dads that you could see it perhaps expanding into that.
All right. Andrea Haynes, Blue Sky Innovation, thanks for coming by.
Sure thing.
What's in the Red Eye this weekend?
So Red Eye is all about Pitchfork.
Pitchfork
is going on today. They got a nice cool day for it, so hopefully people aren't getting heat stroke like before noon on day one. And that is definitely the hot thing going on this weekend.
All right, we'll see you again next week.
Thanks, Steve.
Tom Gimbel is the founder, the leader, the CEO of LaSalle Network, and he's also a world traveler. He comes by on most Fridays. Tom, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
And I had PermaSeal do my basement.
Did you?
Yes,
smart
I did.
Man,
and
yeah.
No flooding.
Yeah, it's well, we live not too far from each other, right? It's been pretty rough.
I had a tree come down in the backyard. Got
is
hit
that
by
right?
lightning.
Yeah, yep. It's amazing when you see off ramps.
You couldn't
highways,
exit.
It flooded and everything. So
yeah.
Okay, so I want to talk about internships.
Yep.
And because it seems like they've gotten a lot of attention this past year. Maybe it's just because it's summertime. Before that, though, last time we talked, you were going off on a solo trip.
I did.
To Spain, Barcelona, and you were going to kind of hang out with yourself.
Yep.
How did it go?
It went well.
Yeah,
I still like myself. I had a few ups and downs.
Did you have a few arguments with yourself?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, it's really interesting. Traveling alone is interesting to get your take because you lead the groups when you do it.
Right.
The biggest thing I realized was when you travel alone is the lack of laughter.
Oh, interesting.
And you might find something funny and you laugh. You know, ha ha ha.
Right.
But you know, you never revisit that moment again as you do when you're traveling with somebody.
Yeah.
And that was, as you know, I like to laugh.
Right.
And I find a lot of humor in life. And that was the big thing for me.
I think traveling alone can be very hard.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find it hard?
I did. You know what? I stayed in Barcelona for 4 days and it was a day and a half, maybe too long.
Right.
What I liked the best was I drove up the coast of Spain and being in the car alone and you had some music and driving and
easier.
Looking.
Yeah.
It's a little easier.
And as far as business, a businessman, a business person doing something like this, do you think there's benefit?
Yeah, it gives you a lot of chance to think. I'm a fairly reflective guy. I like to believe I am. But I also got to see how different businesses operate, and you know, which is really an interesting thing. You see the customer service level on the airlines on a huge commute, not pushing people from Chicago to New York, right?
Right.
You see the restaurants over there. You see the hotels. You see the interaction, the rental car. It really gave me a lot of insights to come back and say, what are we doing right? What are we doing wrong?
All right. Do you do internships at LaSalle Network?
I have 15 interns 15. Working this summer.
I'm assuming you think you do them right.
I think we do them well.
Okay.
You know, I don't know if there's a right or a wrong.
What makes them well? What makes them good?
Well, I'd say number one is we get some productivity out of it, right? And
okay.
I think we do majority of our internships are paid internships. And for those, we do them kind of in lieu of bringing people on over the summer. So we want to give these college students some training and development and exposure, but also get some productivity out of
them. Now, that's time old. But it's new. I don't know that you've always paid them, but it seems as if there has been a shift. Like it went
totally.
To where it used to be
free
you would use
everybody.
That free labor for a while.
Yep.
And I think a lot of companies, when they found out they had to start paying to be legit, they stopped internships.
Yeah.
Right.
And so, but it's a great thing. So we've hired a couple people that worked for the summer, went back to school, and then we've hired them the following year on salary.
Oh, wow, great.
So it's worked positively. And when they come in, they're 3 months ahead of any new hire, right? They know what the system is.
So that's a plus, but you know them too.
Exactly.
You're not relying
right.
on a couple of meetings or interviews. You know what they can do.
And there's no shock of worrying that they're not going to like the culture or what's going on. They've lived it.
Right, right,
they
right.
saw it. Now, I think when I say doing it well versus doing it perfectly, you've got to find the right intern for your company, and your company has to be the right for that employee. We have one college student who's just going to be a sophomore. And I don't know how she lucked her way into the internship with all these going to be seniors. But she hustles and works hard. And because she's 3 years younger than the other group of interns, there isn't the social clatter that goes on, right? She's just there to work.
And is that good? Yeah.
It's nice. Now, the other thing, though, is with the other ones, there's something very refreshing and you feel good about it, is having a group of 15 kids from probably 12 different colleges. And they would never have known each other if they didn't intern at our place.
And now they've got that
and
in common.
And seeing that friendship and that bond.
I don't know that I'm still friends, but I can remember people with whom I interned here.
Yeah.
Back in the 80s. I wasn't being rude. I was looking on my phone because So my kids have two very different internships. My son is at video production, little mom and pop Trillium in Evanston. So he's literally working in their house.
Yep.
My daughter's at Baxter Credit Union up in Vernon Hills. So those are two very different experiences. I think they're both getting something out of it.
Absolutely.
Which means that it kind of it's about the intern as well.
It is about the individual, and there's something to be said that, you know, I still have a warm spot in my heart because I mowed lawns in the summer.
Yeah,
right. Being the lifeguard and the lawnmower and all that kind of thing. But in a perfect world, if someone was going to do an internship, doing a small company 1 year and a bigger company the second year or vice versa, I think there's a lot of value to actually see what it's like.
Tom Gimble, the CEO of the LaSalle Network, thanks for coming by.
Always good to be with you, Steve.
Welcome back to the Continental.
Thank you.
Louis Lazar is in the studio from the Chicago Business Journal. Louis, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thank you.
Bring that microphone just a little closer to you, if you would. All right, so Louis writes about airlines. He writes about advertising a lot at the Business Journal, all these different things. And whenever you come in, I try to review what you've just written, and it's about a story
an
hour.
It's about a five-year process.
we try to get through it quickly. I guess you do. But today, you actually wrote earlier this week or maybe yesterday about Federal Express opening up a big sort of just outside the loop distribution center. That's happening today, right?
Well, specifically FedEx Ground, which is not separate from their air delivery. Yeah, so that seems to be where they're putting a lot of the focus lately because it's slightly cheaper than air and a lot more people don't need to have it there overnight.
I would imagine business has really picked up with online commerce and things as well.
Well, that seems to be a big driving force. They're opening up 15 of these centers at various key markets across the country, so clearly the e-commerce is a big part of it.
And what is it? Are there jobs on that? It's 29th Street, is that what it is?
29th Street, yeah. There are about 150 jobs going into it initially, but they said as the business expands, they expect to add to that.
All right, so that's going on today. Now, the last few visits we've had together, we always end up talking about American Airlines and their uniforms.
Indeed.
And you are the man who's changed the world.
I have. 9 months, 55 stories later, the American Airlines announced a couple of months ago they are going to go through a whole process of getting a new set of uniforms, doing away with the Twin Hill uniform. It's not going to happen tomorrow. It's going to take 2 years because they're dealing with 70,000 employees. But, you know, it's a new chapter for
Maybe we got a little ahead of ourselves for people who don't know, but they introduced these new uniforms, and a lot of people said they were literally making them sick.
At least 5,000. I mean, not just, you know, little this and that, but major respiratory issues and all kinds of horrible skin problems, and it was a major, and one pilot finally got up and said, we've got a major safety problem in the cockpit, and I think that was part of what turned the tide on this whole thing.
And so now
that and 55 stories
I'm
that
sure.
I wrote. Right?
Yeah, the 54th wouldn't have done it, but the 55th probably turned the corner. While we're on the topic of airlines, what's up? How's United doing? I think you wrote a piece that their regional traffic has dropped quite a bit.
Right, but I think that's actually part of a grand strategy that's going to pay off for
them big time. Work for them.
Yeah, because it's going to get rid of a lot of their on-time issues because those regional carriers they use to do the regional flights are not as reliable as the mainline operations. So they're gradually shifting more of their business onto this mainline again, the way it used to be back in the old days, and I think that's going to help them. They're already showing significant improvement in their on-time.
They're not obligated to do regional flights, or are they?
Well, they're obligated to the degree that they need to serve smaller markets than the main line can accommodate.
Right.
So that,
are they by regulation that they are?
No,
required?
They don't have to by regulation. It's just part of the strategy to make them as accessible to more and more people.
But the idea then is, if they don't do as much regional, they're on time more, looks better, more profitable.
Usually, traditionally, there have been a couple of months when that wasn't the case, but usually the main line is significantly more on time than the regional end. But they're both. But even though the regional use smaller planes, it's still about 50% of the total business United has in any given month.
And when we talk regional, we're talking Chicago to
Peoria or Rockford or Madison or Milwaukee even some longer flights into like Denver and places you wouldn't think there would be a regional market is sometimes served by regional flights.
Speaking of longer flights, the Illinois Congressional Delegation just got involved in this Middle East airline. Snip, is it Qatar Airlines? And
Qatar and Etihad and Emirates.
So what is the beef there? What exactly is going on? United and Delta, they say they're sort of getting screwed by the Middle East Airlines.
They claim that the Middle East Airlines are getting aggressive and adding new routes and squelching expansion by U.S. carriers and therefore reducing jobs and a whole, you know, economic activity for the U.S.
What's
airlines.
What's their case?
What is the case of the U.S. airlines?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it can be argued both ways. I mean, the Middle East carriers say they're not a problem because they hire a lot of U.S. people. They generate a lot of economic activity in the United States, and they just think that the U.S. carrier should shut up and compete. That's
but,
all.
But doesn't United also say, though, that they can't compete because these airlines, which are pretty much government-run, are getting huge subsidies from the government, and so... It's just not fair, Lewis. It's not fair.
Well, of course, I have that. You know, you guys, if you rather than whine, you know, try and do something that you think can strike a competitive stance. The real problem is these Middle East carriers, yes, whether they get their money from the government or from their own revenue generating, the fact is they are operating much more high-end airlines than the U.S. carriers who were, you know, set back a decade because of the recession and other factors.
So it seems to me if the Illinois congressional delegation is involved, they're making an appeal to the Trump administration. Mm-hmm. It seems to me like this is in the Trump administration's sort of quiver. This is something that they would react well to. America first, not being taken advantage of by overseas governments and airlines. Right?
On the surface, yeah, you would say that's true. But Obama resisted the entreaties of the U.S. airlines for a number of years. And Trump so far, anyway, not that he hasn't had a lot of other stuff on his plate. But as I said, the Middle East carriers are being very aggressive about pushing back on all these claims. And I think they're getting some traction. You know, when they just, Emirates, one of the big three, presented this whole document a couple of days ago about how much economic activity they generate with Boeing and many other vendors in the United States.
So where do you see this ending up?
I can't predict. I mean, I think, you know, Trump could look at both sides and they just may let them battle it out, continue to battle it out. I mean, right now there's no reason to stop the Middle East carriers from going on with their expansion and the U.S. carriers will just go on complaining. But, you know.
All right. So we'll watch
we'll
that.
Play it out on the playing field.
Up to Wrigley Field, you talk advertising. And I think United Airlines was the longtime sponsor of the Cubs, right? Right. American moved
in 2015,
a couple of years ago. When we first started talking, I think probably was one of the first things we talked about. And now they're getting a little outside exposure at the park.
Well, they've got not only this club, the big exposure is not coming until 2018, the start of the season, when they're going to have the biggest premium club in the whole ballpark right behind home plate. But now they've got this interesting conference center that the Cubs put into the mix that they've gotten the naming rights for also. So people can have a little business meeting and then go over and watch the ball game. And they've got all sorts of different conference center meeting rooms and what have you.
So that's the building just adjacent to the park?
It's the office complex for the Cubs management. They're calling it the American Airlines Conference Center.
When I read these stories by you, Lewis, I'd like to sort of see if I can read between the lines and find out exactly what's going on here. And this story, and I can't find it. Shoot. I don't have the... In the story that you wrote about this, you went right to the food. Now, were you eating free food up there? Is that what's going on?
Oh, you mean at the conference center?
Yeah, at the conference center. There was like a pretzel bar and a make-your-own hot dog.
Were you mouth watering or what?
Yeah.
I mean, there was a donut sundae bar, I think.
That's what it was.
I mean, what can I say? I mean, I'm not that big on food, but I always think, I know a lot of people are, so I always try to include that in the coverage.
All right. At Wrigley, too, another piece was about Joe Madden and his Winnebago.
That's really interesting. The series of little vignettes, 30-second and 45-second vignettes with him and his RV and his wife.
Because he lives in an RV, right?
Apparently. This was news to me until yesterday. I mean, I found this out yesterday.
Right.
But he's not, you know, doing his Cubs thing. They tool around in a home. What do they call it? Not a mobile home, but a... one of those big, $500,000 doohickeys.
And so Winnebago took advantage of that to make
do a little promotional sponsorship.
And they're like little, I watched a couple of them because I thought, well, maybe we'll play some of the sound, but there's really not even enough.
More
there's
visual
no plot.
Than it is.
Walking.
I mean, what can you do? And they got to have the credit roll. They're trying to make like a real sitcom you would see on television with the little credit roll at the end of the 30-second tape. So it's kind of cute.
Kind
of
funny.
There's not
see.
A lot of content, but you know, if you get off on seeing the inside of these motorhomes, that's what I was trying to do, motorhomes,
right.
And it gives you a good view of those. And his apparently is one of the best there is out there.
Yeah, there's no content at all. I mean, one of them is he's sleeping while he's watching the fire, and his wife is yelling
it's
at
great,
him.
Then I got rid of it, blah, blah. But, you know, it's an interesting way for these companies to tie in with, at least for now, the cop's still seen as a success story.
And it's a good advertising. Well, you tell me you're the expert, but it seems effective because it's laughing at itself, too.
Right.
It's got the really cheesy laugh track on them.
You know, this is not some, we're not changing the world here, but we're just giving you a little something to divert you for 30 seconds.
Yeah, people can check that out. I would have played some audio, but there really wasn't anything. There's almost nothing to play.
Yeah, so. Well, if you go on YouTube, you can get it pretty quickly. Meet the Maddens, it's called.
Meet the Maddens.
Right.
Technomic is a Chicago-based food analysis company, right?
Correct.
They look
research,
at the fast food.
Yeah, research,
and they came out with a study on our burger consumption.
Mm.
And we're not eating not as many burgers. No, we're not eating burgers anymore?
No, because I guess people are getting slowly but surely turned on to these other menu options that the fast food companies are adding to give themselves a more healthy profile.
You mean like the chicken sandwich?
Chicken sandwich and wraps and salads. I mean, they aren't
out of
the picture.
Who's going to go out
for
a salad?
Well, that's just it. But apparently, it's at least it's helping diminish the consumption of burgers in some significant way.
So you think we're moving away from burgers because they're less healthy, or because I think in,
well, they're more
some
expensive.
Ways,
that's
well,
one of the
say,
things that yeah.
I was going to say.
For the average working person, I mean, you add that and a little few add-ons, you're $10 or $15 easily.
I think that's the point. The burgers now are becoming a little specialized. Where,
right.
You know, I like to have a fried egg on my burger, Lewis.
Right, and they're going to add on big time for that.
Forget about the special sauce. I need avocado.
And I just wrote about also this Epic Burger, small chain here in Chicago. They're adding this pea protein burger.
It's a beef burger.
Because the owner of this company is convinced that people will prefer a pea protein burger to the real beef burger. And they've even got it where this pea protein thing bleeds because they add a little beet to the mix and it all...
Okay, wait a minute, back up. I thought it was a beet burger, but it's peas?
The pea, it's all made out of pea. It's a plant-based burger entirely.
Okay.
It has no beef in it.
And the blood look comes from beet juice.
From the beet that they add to it.
Okay, I would try the donut bar, but I don't know. Did you try that one?
Well, I told him when I wrote my story, reading between the lines about this, you know, protein, pea protein burger, I said he's going to have, because he's the first burger chain in the Chicago to offer this. And I said he's going to have a real eye opening to find out if this really goes over
at
all.
But if it does.
Well, I remain a little skeptical.
I got people in my family who don't eat burgers. They don't eat meat. So
have
this
they
could
eaten
be...
anything with a pea protein substance instead?
I kept
pressing them. Does this really taste like something you would even... But they claim it has a taste. I haven't tasted one.
You didn't get
one.
A taste.
No, not yet. Well, they were only doing... They're not doing the tasting until next week.
So. Okay, well, I'll meet you over there.
Yeah.
Lewis
way
Lazar.
Over. The one they're doing it at is way over in the West Loop.
But, all right, that is Lewis Lazar. You can read more from him at bizjournals.com/Chicago. Good to see you again.
Thank you.
Jen Bain is in the studio. And, well, look, Jen, I smile as soon as I start to say your name. We only met. What's that about?
Oh, I just guess I'm really charming.
You are incredibly charming. She is the title is community manager
that's
for
correct.
Cards Against Humanity.
Yes.
How long have you been there?
I've been there close to 5 years now. I was the first employee hired back in 2013. Does that math check out? Yes.
Close enough. I think it's tricky when you go to numbers and years. I know it's kind of hard sometimes. Well, that's nice that they brought on a woman early on.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm really proud that the first, like, 7 to 10 hires after me, they were all women. I believe we're a little over half women now.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm really proud of that.
I'm laughing only because of you guys just crack me up because of the different, I mean, you're very successful in selling the game and then adapting that, but then also just taking, you know, making commentary in one way or another. I don't know sometimes what the commentary is when you're, you know, digging holes in the middle of nowhere for nothing. But the latest one was you came out with a women's version of Cards Against Humanity.
That's
long overdue.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, I just think it's so hilarious that this game has been out since 2009 and we're pretending to just have discovered the demographic of women. That
right.
is just like a hilarious misstep to me, and that's a joke we couldn't resist. So Cards Against Humanity for her is exactly the same game as the original Cards Against Humanity, but it is $5 more, and it's pink.
And if it's pink, well, then that must appeal to women.
Oh, of course. Women love the color pink.
And if it's $5 more, well, that appeals to everyone who sells things to women.
That's right.
Cards Against Humanity for her, it's trendy, stylish, and easy to understand.
Yeah, for us silly women who can't play complicated board games, of course. I hope everyone knows I'm being sarcastic. Your listeners know that, right?
I think they probably do.
Okay.
I hope they do. Wait, you're kidding?
I'm kidding. Just making sure.
So what's the reaction been?
Oh, it's been overwhelmingly positive. Like, everyone is in on the joke, which is a relief to me.
Yeah. Was this your joke?
It's always a group effort. Like, I remember we had this idea to do a Cards Against Humanity lady version years ago, just because we started riffing on the idea, like, in a conference room. We were just talking about it. Like, I was talking to Max, who you've met, and yep. Trin, and we were saying it would be so funny if it was just the same game, but just with, like, a butterfly on it, which is exactly what we ended up doing.
So, yeah, Max has been on a few times. And last time we talked, he was sending potatoes to a Wisconsin senator. Is that still going on?
I think all the potatoes have been delivered at this point.
Oh,
it got up to a couple thousand potatoes.
Right. So the point was made.
Yeah, I hope so.
And the point has been made here with this one. You're charging $5 more, the idea that women are upcharged on so many different things.
Yeah, it's called the pink tax.
The pink tax. Well, who in their right mind would buy this if they could get the same version, non-pink, for $5 less?
We asked ourselves the same thing, but we are about to sell out. But I'm really proud that all the profits from Cards Against Humanity for Her are going to an organization called Emily's List, which helps elect women to office in the United States.
Right. I know a woman who could have used some help from them maybe last year.
Yeah, that would have been nice.
So you just said you're sold out or you're about to sell out?
I just checked right before I went on when I was in the green room, and it looks like we're very close to selling out right
now. What's the number?
I think we have 50 left.
Really?
Yeah.
And you sold a few thousand.
Sold a couple thousand, yeah.
Right. Which is kind of what, you weren't going to make 10,000.
I think we're losing money on this.
Really? All right, take me then into your creative process or your office, because we talk here, you know, a lot about culture and all of that. And I know from talking with Max that in some cases, you even have like a writer's room, for a sitcom.
Yeah, we do have a writer's room. It's a group of Chicago comedians that get together and write the cards and brainstorm ideas, and they are just the funniest, most creative group of people. I contribute sometimes. I sit in on the brainstorming, and I would say I'm not helpful because I just sit there and laugh.
Laugh, right.
Yeah. Our office is like, I don't like the phrase hub, but it really is like a creative hub for Chicago.
And what means?
It's not just a Cards Against Humanity office. We have a space in Bucktown, but we share it with developers, designers, a photographer. We have a beekeeper. It's just an amazing place to go and not focus just on Cards Against Humanity, which I think is a strength of ours.
Okay, so you're at an office sharing spot, or does Cards Against Humanity share its office with these people?
Right. We own the building, but it's really, we only have half the desks there, I think.
Okay, and so you invite others to come in.
Yes, exactly.
But really, tell me about the culture because if everyone's walking around being kind of smart-assy and funny, it can sometimes be intimidating, too.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's true. I haven't thought of it that way.
Oh, no, you're intimidating me right now.
Really?
Yeah, see, because that was kind of smart-assy and funny.
I'm glad to hear I'm intimidating you. I really hope our office is a welcoming place, because I try really hard, especially with when we bring in our interns, our college interns, I try to give them the opportunity to be comedy writers themselves.
Right. And how many people are working there every day?
Let me think. So we have desks for 40 people.
I think
we probably have 30 to 40 people, 40 desks there. And I think we have, at any given time, 15 to 25 people around.
Okay. And now this is going to be a really stupid question, but what are they doing?
This is an amazing question. Not stupid at all. I get asked that all the time.
Yeah.
Like, what is happening in your office? Like, people ask us if they can tour the office. And the truth is, I think it would be very boring because we're just, like, on our computers all day. There are definitely, I mean, one of my favorite parts about the job, and there are many amazing things, is that no day is actually ever the same.
Sure, that's
great. There's just enough routine for me to, like, have a rhythm at my job. But the truth is, like, if something is funny happening in the news, we might all jump in a conference room and be like, okay, should we respond to this? Should we make a thing? Or what should we do?
Yeah, so that's why I say, what are you doing? Because the game is out. The adaptations of the game, you know, come from time to time. But in a way, it's the social commentary that seems the most steady sort of output from you, maybe. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. We try, you know, the game, you know, pays the bills. It does really well. It's the reason why we have an office. But the truth is, we consider ourselves like a comedy writing stunt company at this point, or at least we'd aspire to that.
What's the worst idea that we didn't see?
Oh, man. Well,
And it could be one of Max's.
Oh, I would definitely pin it on Max. He is on a well-deserved vacation right now, and he is not listening to this, so I'd be happy to pin it on Max. Well, we had a bad idea a couple months ago, and then we reinvented it, and we're actually going to try it. So,
give us a hint.
It will be this winter, and I think Chicagoans will like it.
All right. Jen Bain is the community manager for Cards Against Humanity. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much.
It was great to meet you. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, that was awesome.